The Gemara had been discussing how, going back to Mem Tes Amud Aleph, the Mishnah said a man doesn't have a chazaka even though he used his wife's property for 3 years. So the Gemara said, of course he doesn't have a chazaka. He has the rights to the fruits. So the Gemara says, we're talking about a case where the man surrendered his rights to her fruits. Because he gave her a document saying, I have no claim on your stuff. So the Gemara says, but even that's not enough just to say in a document, I have no claim on your stuff. So the Gemara explains, he gave it to her before they had Nisuin, when she was still in Arusa. As a lesson of Rav Kahana, that wherever the sages legislated something for a person can say, I don't want to have the Takana of Chazal. I don't want to have the help that they offered me. And I'm refusing. As Rava said, anyone who says, I don't want to have the Takana of Chazal like this, we listen to him. What do you mean like this? So the Gemara said, Rav Huna said, the name of Rav, a woman can say, I don't want to have mizonos because I don't want to give you whatever I'm producing. Okay, so that was the first part of the Gemara. And here's really where our sugya starts. The middle of Mem Testament Beis. Again, the Mishnah says that a husband doesn't have a chazakah against his wife. If he uses her field for 3 years, now he's trying to claim that that buttresses his claim, that he bought it from her, he's not believed. Sounds like he doesn't have a chazaka. A raya yesh. But if he had something more than chazaka, a proof, namely, if he has witnesses that he bought it from her, then he would win, and the field would be his. So Gemara asks, but why is that so? Why is even a proof good? Tema, let her be able to claim. Nachasua chasisi labaili. You have witnesses that say I sold you the field, but at the time I was married to you. I just wanted to keep you happy. I gave you, or I went ahead with the charade of selling you the field to keep you happy, but I wasn't really selling it to you. I was your wife. Don't we have a source in a Mishnah that the claim, Nachasua Chasisi Labaili, works to basically take away the strength of witnesses? Milotnan, didn't we learn in the Mishnah? If a man goes and he wants to buy land from somebody else, that guy tells him, I can't sell you the land, because the land is obligated to pay my wife's ksuba. Lakach mina ish, if he paid the man for the land, v'chazev lakach mina isha, but then just for good measure he went, and he had the woman who's the lien holder sign also on the land. Nevertheless, if the seller dies and now there's a need to pay the ksuba, mekcho batel, the wife takes the land, and there was no sale. She herself signed. That's as good as a proof. But Alma Amra, apparently she can say, I signed, but my signature's worthless. Because I signed when I was a wife. Nachasrua chasisi lebaili. The only reason why I signed was because I didn't want my husband to be upset. I wanted to make my husband happy. So, shalom bayis. So if that's the case, hachanami. So in terms of our inference, where we said there's no chazaka, but there is proof, why shouldn't she be able to say it was only nachasruach, and therefore it wasn't really a sale? So the Gemara suggests, hayitmar Allah, what we learned about that very halacha, that when a woman signs along the sale, it's still not a good sale on the land that was obligated for her ksuba. That Rabbi Bar Rav Huna said, Lo nitzricha ela ba'osan gimel sados. This law that when a woman says later, oh, I know there were witnesses, there was a contract, I myself signed on the sale of the field that should have been coming to me, to you, that it doesn't take effect. That's true with the three special fields, three fields that she's relying on those fields for her ksuba. So since she's relying on those fields, she has great reliance, So therefore, the later activity, she can say, well, that was meaningless because I was relying on this a great deal.
What did the field back if you sold it, if they get the voice?
She gets the field back even though she was part of the sale. She signed along. But since these fields were very obligated to her, we know that when she signed, she didn't mean it. What are the three fields that are very obligated? One would be a case where the field that was sold first by the husband and then by her too, it itself was identified and written in the ksuba. You know, our ksuba state, that the husband says, all of my property, even the shirt on my back, is obligated for the ksuba. But here, it wasn't that all of the property was obligated. It was a particular field. This address, 200 Johnson Road, is obligated for the ksuba. So that's a field that she's very reliant on. So then if her husband sells the field that he identified in the ksuba, the husband sells it, and then she also signed afterwards, she can say, I know we sold, it was signed, but we never meant it. Because you knew that I was relying on this field.
I don't think she owned the field.
No, the husband owns the field.
So she owns it.
Pledged in the
ketubah. Oh, is that okay?
We're talking about this case.
So it was identified in the ketubah as part of the dowry or whatever.
As the main thing that he'll pay her back from. So when there's a field identified in the ksuba for her, in that case we say this law of this Mishnah, that if a stranger bought the field and then he went through from the husband, and then he went through the hassle of getting her to sign on and agree to it, it wasn't an agreement. It was only nachas ruach hasisi labayli. She only did it to sign, to make him happy, because the stranger should realize she really expects this field. It was obligated to her. The second field where we have this law, va'achas shayichid la b'ksubasa. The ksuba was a normal ksuba, saying that the husband obligates everything he has to her. But a couple of weeks later, there were witnesses that the husband brought in front of a particular field and said, this field has the value of the ksuba. This field is obligated for the ksuba. Va'achas, and the third, that it was her father's field, she had inherited it from her father, she's bringing it into the marriage, and it was assessed, and the assessed value of her property was written into the ksuba. This is what we call nichsei tzon barzel, iron-clad property, where the husband has an obligation to give it back to her, that whenever the ksuba comes due with divorce or a death, that value of the field has to be given back to her the way it was worth at the time of the marriage. So these are things which she's relying on a great deal. So where she's relying on a great deal, if the husband went and sold it, and then the buyer went and got her to sign it too, that was not a purchase. Because she says, Nachas Ruach Asisi Lebaili. So, sounds like, in other cases, though, we don't say nachas ruach asisi lebayli. So that can now explain our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that a husband who's using a field that belongs to his wife, that doesn't make him have a strong claim that he purchased. He doesn't have chazaka. But if he'd have proof, if he'd have witnesses, that would work, it sounds like. Yeah, it would work, but if it's not one of these three fields. So, one second, let's look at this a little bit closer. When you say this law that Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili was said about these three fields, what is that excluding? If it's to exclude all other properties, I don't understand. In other fields that she signed along, all the more so that she can claim Nachas Ruach Hasisi Lebaili. Kol Shekein, certainly she can say, the only reason why I agreed to the sale of the field was the Havile Eva, was because my husband would be very angry if I wouldn't agree to the sale. Because it's not known to be mine, and he sells it, there's a lien on it, like everything there's a lien on. If I wouldn't sign along, Tamar Leh, he's going to tell me what? You're expecting to collect it? You're expecting the ksuba to come due? A nayach nasata begerishin? Are you already planning for there to be a divorce? Or v'misa, for me to die, that you want to protect your ksuba? What's going on? There's never going to be a ksuba. I'm going to live out longer than you, and I'm never divorcing you. So she said, I had to sign along because I was worried about the anger he would feel if I didn't. But it certainly wasn't a sale. So Ella, so what is it coming to exclude? Lim'ute, what it's coming to exclude is nichse malog. It's coming to exclude her property. That if she has property, that the husband has a right to pluck its fruits, so that if the husband sells, and then she agrees to the sale, that is a good sale. Because we say, what mean nachas ruach asisi labayli? It's hers. If it's hers, she wouldn't be embarrassed to say, no, I don't agree to it. If she agreed to it, that means it's real. So that's the case of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is saying that if a husband is living in a territory of his wife for 3 years with no protest, that doesn't imply that it belongs to the husband. Which implies that if the husband is more than just living 3 years, the husband also has witnesses that he bought it from her, then he would be able to stay. We asked, why can't she claim? Nachas ruach hasisi labayli, the witnesses are meaningless. I only did it because I wanted to keep my husband happy. It was a charade. The answer is that's the law. We don't say nachas ruach hasisi labayli in all cases. We say nachas ruach hasisi labayli in his fields. But when the field belongs to her, when it's nichse malog, then we don't say nachas ruach hasisi labayli. So the Gemara rejects this too. Amar Amemar. But Amemar said, Ish v'isha shemachu b'nichse malog. A husband and a wife selling nichse malog. Lo asu v'lo klom. They didn't accomplish anything. So what the Gemara thinks that this means is our case. The husband sold the nichse malog to someone, and then his wife also signed on that sale. And that was meaningless because we say she only signed it because nachas ruach hasisi labayli, she wanted to keep her husband happy. So if when selling to somebody else, we say it was only nachas ruach hasisi labayli. Certainly in selling it to her own husband, it's only going to be nachas ruach hasisi labayli.
Rabbi, she sold her property or he sold his rights to do the fruit?
No, he sold it. He sold the whole thing. And then she agreed to it. That's what the Gemara thinks was the case.
She sold the fruit and the property.
Right.
With her consent.
Then there was her consent, right.
Or she sold it to him.
That's the our case. Right. So now the Gemara says, no. Our Mishnah holds that if a woman sells her nichse malog to her husband, it does work. So what was Amemar's case when Amemar said that a husband and wife can't sell nichse malog? Itmar da Amemar. When was the lesson of Amemar? Not that he sold it and then she agreed. Hecha dezaben ihu umis. He sold it and then he died. He sold it and then he died. Asya ihi. So she can come, mafka. She can take it away from the purchaser. Why can she take it away? Because the buyer, they only got what the husband had. So when the husband had was the right to the fruits during his lifetime. So he sold it to the purchaser. So now that the husband died, the wife can take it away. Inami, alternatively, zabna ihi. When Amemar says a husband and a wife can't sell the nichse malog, that could mean that zabna ihi umesa. She sold it. Now she had the title. And she did sell the title. Umesa, but she died. Asa'ihu, and Amemar is saying the husband can't sell and she can't sell. What does it mean she can't sell? She can't sell the title. Because if she then dies, if the husband was never a partner of it, the husband takes the land away from the buyer. And that's only a takanta d'rabbanan. That's only a rabbinic enactment. In other words, biblically, since it's her, she could sell it. But rabbinically not. Why? Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina, Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina taught us back in Maseches Ksubos. Tam Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina, Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina taught, Be'usha Hiskinu. The Sanhedrin, the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, traveled from place to place. We all know it was in Jerusalem. Then it had to go down to Yavne. But it had to travel to lots of places. Eventually it was in Usha, a town in the Galil. So in Usha Itkinu, in Usha they made an enactment that Aisha Shemachar B'nichsei Malog, if a woman sells her property, that her husband is entitled to get the fruits from it during her husband's lifetime, Umesa, and then she dies, and the husband never agreed. Habal Motzim Yada Lekuchos, the husband gets it. Why? Because what is the nature of Nichsei Malog? Through the marriage, the husband has rights to the fruits. She owns the principal, but the husband has rights to the fruits. He doesn't own the principal. He only has rights to the fruits. In Usha, they instituted that someone who has rights to the fruits has something in the principal. How to define it, we don't know, but there's something he has in the principal. So therefore, when she sells the principal, if she then dies first, the husband can say, I bought the principal first. Because my marriage of her, which gave me the rights to the fruits, gave me something in the principal. So my purchase came before this person's purchase, and I therefore get it. So that's the case of what Amemar was saying. However, to go to our Mishnah, but if the husband were to sell it, and then the wife agree, and she signs on, inami zabna ihi lididei, or if she sells to him in front of witnesses or in a contract, zbine zvine, even Amemar agrees that the sale is a sale. And we don't say, nachas ruach, asisi lebaili, that she went through a charade just to make husband happy. Yeah, question.
So, only in the case of witnesses then, because any correct other case, she can't sell it. Because if she sells it, she's doing it for him.
Maybe.
If he sells it, she's doing it for him.
Maybe, right?
So there is no case.
If their witnesses were saying it would work on the Nichsei Malog. Yeah, on the witnesses.
If she sells the property, does he still have rights to the fruit?
No.
No. He loses that.
The case of Amemar? Yeah. The case of Amemar, yeah. He still rights to the fruit.
But would they both have to sell it in front of a witness then? In other words, if he sold it in front of a witness, and she then said, okay, I agree. In front of a witness,
that now works.
She's no longer doing it just to make him happy?
Now we've rejected that idea. That's right. Now we're saying it is wholehearted. We only say she's doing it just to make him happy in the cases when, you know, it's property that everybody, the buyer knows is really hers, or property that she needs for her ksuba, and there's no thought of it, of a marriage ending. But in these cases, when it's her own property, so she does feel entitled to protest about it, her own property, we don't say she just did it to make him happy. His property, we would say that on, but not on her property.
But based on this enactment, Rabbi, no one would ever buy Merog property. Right, because if the wife dies first, then...
Right. That was the takana of Usha, to protect her. That's right. Now, again, Amimah had said that a wife and a husband who sell, the deal doesn't work. So what does that mean? So initially we thought it meant that she sold to him, they both sold. Now we're saying, no, it means that just she sold, or just he sold. Generally we can say that, what is Amemar saying? Maybe Amemar is against our Mishnah that says there could be proof to a sale from wife to husband. Amemar to Amar Kirib Elazar. Amemar said his ruling like the view of Rabbi Elazar. Tanya, for we learned in a Braisa. Hamocher es avdo. If a person sells his slave, so he's maintaining an ownership. He made a deal, though, that the buyer, that the slave is still going to work for him for the next 30 days. So he has a kinyan peiros. He gets what comes out of the slave. Reb Meir says, Harisho. Now, there's an important point. If a man kills somebody else, so that man is a murderer, he gets put to death. Let's say Reuven hit Shimon, and it takes Shimon 3 months in the hospital, but then Shimon dies. Reuven still gets put to death, because he wouldn't have been in the hospital if not for Reuven. So we say that Reuven's hitting him killed him 3 months later, but still Reuven's hitting him, and Reuven gets put to death. That's not true with a slave. If the master hits the slave and kills the slave right away, the master gets put to death. However, if the master hits the slave and the slave lingers for 12 months and then the slave passes away, the master does not get put to death. It's a special pasuk called Yomo Yomayim. If he dies after a day or two, then the master is responsible. But if not, then the master, if the master caused the death, then the master does not get put to death. Right? If the slave survived for a day or two, the slave didn't die right away, then the master does not get put to death. So it's very important to figure out who is the master. Because whomever is the master will have this leniency in a case of murder. So here's the case. A man sold his slave, but he kept some ownership because he's still getting the produce of the slave. So now, Rabbi Meir says, Arishon, the seller, Yeshno b'din yom yomayim, if he's the one who hits the slave, and the slave lingers for, let's say, 3 or 4 days, 1 or 2 days, and then the slave dies, so he's the one who's exempt now from being put to death. Vashini, but the second one, who doesn't yet have usage, he doesn't have this leniency. He doesn't have control over the slave yet that he bought. Because Rabbi Meir holds a Kenyan Peros, the seller who still has the rights of the fruits. Kenyan Aguftami, he's the one who's considered the owner of the principal. Rabbi Yehuda holds Hasheni Yeshna B'din Yomu Yomayim. The second one, the buyer, has the law of Yomu Yomayim. If he puts this man to death and the man died over a day or two, he wouldn't die. Mipnei Shehu Kaspo, because the slave belongs to him. Harishon, because he bought him. Harishon the first, the seller, Eino B'din Yomu Yomayim, doesn't have the law of Yomu Yomayim. Sheino Kaspo, because he sold him, he's no longer his. And Kasavar Yod Kinyan Peros, the fact that the first still has the fruit acquisition, Lavka Kinyan Aguftami, that's not owning in the essence. And Rabbi Yossi says, Shneyem Yeshnan B'din Yomu Yomayim, both of them have the law of Yomo Yomayim, that if they put him to death, if there was a day or two delay before he died, so then he wouldn't have the death penalty, because Rabbi Yossi has a suffix. The earliest time for Talis and Tefillin is 6:21, because we moved the clock, so we shouldn't put on Tefillin right away. Zemi Pnei Shu Tachtav. One, the first, because he has the Kenyan Peros. The Zemi Pnei Shu Kaspo. And the second, the buyer, because he owns the slave. Umasafkale. And Rabbi Yossi is not sure. Do we say Kenyan Peros, Kenyan Aguftami, the first who has the rights of fruits from the slave? It's like he owns the essence, so therefore he has the law of a slave master. That namely, if he kills his slave, but the slave didn't die right away, he is exempt. Maybe the fact that he just has slave, that he gets the fruits, is not enough to own the principal. He doesn't own the principal. He's not considered the slave master. So his relationship to this man is like a relationship of anybody to this man. And since we don't know, safek nefashos lahakel, we have to be lenient in a matter of life and death. Rabbi Lezer, Omer, the fourth opinion, Rabbi Lezer says, Shneim Eina B'din Yom Yomayim, neither, if they hit the slave and cause him to die, would have the law of Yom Yomayim. Why? Zel Afisheino Tachtav, one doesn't have him under his control. The second one, he doesn't have the fruits yet, doesn't have the usage. Vizeh, and the first, Afisheino Kaspo, he doesn't own the essence anymore. Vama Rav, and Rava said, My Taima to Rabbi Lezer. What's the reasoning of Rebbe Lazar? The Pasuk says, Lo yukam, you will not be avenged. This slave's death will not cause the death of the master. Ki kaspohu, because the slave is the property of the master. His property. Kaspo hamiyuchad lo, property that is exclusively his. So since the slave doesn't belong exclusively to the seller, because the seller is going to lose him in 30 days, he's going to lose his rights in 30 days. It doesn't belong exclusively to the buyer, because the buyer can't yet use him. Therefore, it's not called kaspo. So according to Rabbi Elazar, this explanation of Amemar is that Amemar is following Rabbi Elazar. Amemar said again, in Nichse Malog, in the property that a wife brings into a marriage, that the husband's allowed to pluck the fruits, but the principal belongs to her. The husband and wife can't sell it. Maybe it means that even if the husband sold it and then the wife agreed and she signed along, it wasn't a sale, unlike our Mishnah. And you say, why? Because it's the view of Rabbi Elazar. The husband couldn't sell it because it wasn't kaspo, it wasn't his, he only had the rights to the fruit. The wife couldn't sell it. The first time for Talis and Tefillin is 6:21. The wife couldn't sell it because the husband couldn't sell it because he only had rights to the fruit. The wife couldn't sell it because she only had the principal. She didn't have rights to the fruit. So neither is kaspo. Neither can say, it's my property. So that's why they couldn't sell it. So she couldn't even sell it to him. She couldn't sell it to him because she didn't have full ownership over it. And therefore, this would not be like our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that the husband doesn't have chazaka on his wife's property, implying, though, if he would have raya, if he would have a proof, that would work on his wife's property. So we're saying this is against that. If you say that a raya would work, that means there could be a real sale. But we're saying there can't be a sale, because she only has principal without ownership of the fruit, so therefore it's not kaspo, and she couldn't sell. So that Amemar is against our Mishnah, but that's okay. Amemar is the Tana Rabbi Elazar. There were three Tanaim against Rabbi Elazar. There was Rabbi Yossi, there's Rabbi Yehuda, there were others who were against Rabbi Elazar. So our Mishnah is like those Tanaim who are against Rabbi Elazar. Okay, the earliest time for Talis and Tefillin is only 6:21.
Deemed it's a lease back, right? The buyer basically bought this.